Power Records presents...
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Power Records Podcast, where the action comes alive. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm one of your co-hosts, Rob Kelly, and joining me as always is...
Chris Franklin. Rob, I think since we've been gone, vinyl's come back in.
I think so. This is probably the longest break between episodes we have ever done. We didn't intend that. I don't know. What happened? We just kind of forgot about doing Power Records. The last Power Records we did was the Christmas episode with Scooby-Doo. It's been a very long time. I'm not sure the people who left feedback for that episode are all still alive. I don't know. We'll have to find out as we get to it. So apologies, everybody. We didn't really mean to let it go this long. But we're back this time. We're here to do Power Records. And I'm excited because I love doing the show. It's just something we kind of fit in when we can, and we just let it go too long.
Well, and we've been doing Superman Movie Minute together, too, so...
There is that. You know who was on that show?
Who was on that show? Tell us.
Richard Donner was on that show. I don't know if you heard about that. I think you were on it, maybe, but that was a pretty big deal.
I referred to him as Dick Donner.
That's right. Yeah,
personal friend, so that's...
Friend, Dick Donner, that's right.
That's right.
I know everybody's rolling their eyes. They're like, all right, enough already, but we're never going to drop it.
No, we're not.
We're never going to drop it.
No, so, okay. No, I don't plan on ever dropping it. I'm going to put it on my tombstone.
That's right. Beloved son, great father, friend of Richard Donner. And also husband. There was also that.
We threw
that
in there. Right.
Okay. Anyway, we're done talking about Richard Donner, for now at least. The two records we're here to talk about, two Marvel records, The Fantastic Four in The Way It Began, one of their, we'll get to it, but one of my favorites, and then Spider-Man in The Bells of Doom. But before that, we have to thank our sponsor, which is InStockTrades.com. This episode of the Power Records Podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 45% off with free shipping for orders of $50 or more. Chris, what do you got?
I've got Marvel Masterworks, The Fantastic Four, Volume 12. It reprints Fantastic Four number 129 through 141 by Roy Thomas, Jerry Conway, and John Buscema, Ross Andrew, and Ramona Fraiden. So there's Ramona Fraiden for you Aquaman fans out there. The Marvel Masterworks march on with this next collection of incomparable Fantastic Four adventures. When the Human Torch skips out for the Inhumans' hidden city and his girl Crystal, he doesn't find the reception he planned for when Quicksilver greets it. Meanwhile, the Frightful Four launch a surprise attack with their newest member, Thundra, that pushes Reed and Sue to the breaking point. Once the dust settles, the FF will be one fewer because the Invisible Girl has quit. Of course, we wouldn't have the makings of an FF Inhumans epic if Maximus the Mad didn't rear his head and make a power play for the Inhumans throne. By the time all is said and done, the Human Torch will be sporting a fiery new costume, and the Inhuman Queen Medusa will be the FF's newest member. And that's just for starters. Ahead of you are classic battles between the Thing and Thundra, the return of the tiring Dragon Man and Gideon, the world's creepiest babysitter, Agatha Harkness, a bizarre trip back to the 50s courtesy of the Shaper of Worlds, and a reunion with Wyatt Wingfoot. The original price was $59.99. In-stock trade price is $34.79. You save 42%, and this is the collection that will come right after the comic we're covering in this episode.
Wow, I had no idea Ramona Fraiden never worked on the Fantastic Four. That is news to me.
Yeah, it jumped out at me, and I kind of sort of remembered the Fantasticast mentioning that on an episode because they cover, of course, they've covered all these issues. Then I looked it up on Mike's Amazing World, and sure enough, she penciled issue number 133, Thundra at Dawn.
Oh my God, I can't wait to see that, what that looks like. Fantastic Four, drawn by Ramona Fraiden. Well, my pick is I decided to go basically the same route, and I'm doing Marvel Masterworks Fantastic Four Hardcover Volume 18. That reprints Fantastic Four numbers 192 through 203 and Fantastic Four annual numbers 12 and 13. And you mentioned the Fantasticast, and that's a great show hosted by Steve Lacy and Andrew Lanlon. I love that show, and these are the issues they're getting to right now, that whole run, the anniversary issue. They're by Marv Wolfman and Keith Pollard. The Fantastic Four have split up yet again. Having gone their separate ways, you might worry we'll have come up with a new title for the book. But don't, because Dr. Doom's evil machinations will reunite Marvel's first family for its 200th extravaganza. Johnny Storm's hot rod racing, the Thing's demon bashing, Sue's dalliances with Namor and Reed's soul-searching culminate in a massive five-part saga that pits the FF against its nemesis in the series' greatest tradition. Who is Doom's son? How does he have the FF's powers? It's a fight to the finish in Latveria, also featuring Quasimodo, the living computer. That's one of the great names of all time. An outer space adventure with the Inhumans. I love the Inhumans. And a return to the Mole Man. Normal price, $75. In-stock trade price is $43.50. That is 42% off. So if you bought just both these books, you would get free shipping because you'd be over the $50. I have huge gaps in my Fantastic Four knowledge, and I would love to read all these comics. They look like so much fun, and I love, again, I love how they sound over on Fantasticast. They just sound like great comics, so I have to give these old 70s FF books a try. So awesome picks. So for these and all the other trade paperback needs, visit InStockTrades.com. And we thank them for their support. All right, Chris, I'd say without further ado, we should just get right to the first story, which is the Fantastic Four in The Way It Began. What do you think?
Let's do it.
Power Records presents The Fantastic Four, The Way It Began. What is a nightmare? The dictionary tells us it is a terrifying dream, a nightmare. That is what Benjamin J. Grimm enters as he sees...
Susie, murdered by Dr. Doom.
Ben, my darling, what is it? What's wrong?
Alicia, baby, you don't want to know. But I got me some business to take care of fast. Turn around, Doom. I want you to see what's going to happen to you. For what you did to Susie. When Brother Benji gets through with you, you'll... Yow! It ain't possible. I went right through him. Right. Now Doc Doom's fading away like a bad TV picture. And Sue's already long gone. What in blazes?
I thought you'd already have guessed by now, Ben.
What? Ooh.
Now, you really disappoint me, old friend. I should think you would have caught on by now.
Reed, what's with you, Stretcho? What's up?
You see, Ben, you accidentally interrupted a very serious scientific experiment.
What kind? You trying to see what it takes to scare me to death?
Hardly. This is the new improved version of my thought projector helmet. I had to test its power by concentrating on the most repulsive scene I could imagine.
So you thought of Doc Doom killing Susie, huh?
Looks like some other interested parties are about to arrive.
Hey, Ben, what's the buzz anyhow? I heard shouting and a crash.
You couldn't have taken the long way around.
Uh-oh. Here come your real better half, Stretcho. And it looks like she's on the warpath.
Johnny Storm, you flame off and come down here this minute.
If I were you, kid, I'd listen to the lady.
I'm not you, Reed, but here I come.
What do you think you're doing?
But sis, I was only...
And don't you talk back to me.
You tell him, boss lady.
Now be fair, honey. Johnny didn't mean anything. After all, he just thought someone was in danger and he was eager to help, so... Now, why are you looking at me like that?
Because it's already 1 p.m., Mr. Reed Richards, and we have an appointment.
Oh, no. I forgot.
Alicia, baby, about our getting married and all, I've been thinking maybe we should get to know each other a little better first.
If Alicia's got half the smarts I think she does, Granite Puss, she'll be the one who'll do the waiting, like for about 100 years.
Why, you wet-nosed, walking weenie roast, I'll...
You're what, big boy?
Yow! That ain't cute, buddy boy. And neither is what's gonna happen to you.
Johnny, Ben, cut it out.
Tell him to quit, leader man. No, on second thought, I'll tell him myself. Like this. Hey, what the devil?
Look out, Stretcho. We're gonna...
No! No, don't! Stop it, both of you. Stop right now. What's gotten into you?
Sue, we didn't mean...
We just got carried away.
Don't blame them, Sue. We've all been under such a strain lately. I think all this togetherness is starting to get on everybody's nerves.
What are you trying to say, darling?
Just this. That maybe it's time we all had a vacation from each other for a while. Come on, honey. We'll talk about it.
Of course, Reed, darling.
Sheesh! Did you see all that mush stuff, Alicia? Oops. I could cut my tongue out, baby. I shouldn't have said see. It's just that, well, you get around so good and all, sometimes I almost forget that you're...
Blind? I wish I could. But you mustn't feel sorry for me.
Yeah. Come on. I'll walk you home.
Ben, dear, once in a while a girl wants to be alone. I let myself out.
Nuts!
Now what's wrong, Gruesome?
Just this, sonny.
Okay, so what was all that about?
Just a little demonstration, kiddo. I'm the Thing, ain't I? Biggest, strongest bozo this side of the Hulk, right? But what good's it do me if I can't make Alicia see again? What's a brat like you know about love anyhow?
What do I... Well, now, that really tears it. You big lump, I'm getting fed up.
Who cares?
I'm leaving. I've had enough insults.
Hey, wait!
Johnny, where are you going, son?
Someplace where I'm treated like a man. Not just a kid with an all-over hot foot. And don't call me son!
Sue, I'm worried about your brother. He hasn't been himself.
I know it's true.
I wonder why.
Some swinging superhero I am. The closest thing I got to a friend in the world outside of Reed, and I gotta shoot off my mouth and send him packing. Still, long as I'm alone and all, maybe I need me a little distraction, like this thought projector gizmo of Reed's. Hey, what do you know? It fits. Goody. Let's see now. I'll douse the lights first, then just to test it out, I'll take the most repulsive thing I can. The most revolting thing I can think of is me. Hey, that's me. When I first turned into the Thing, way back when. And here I am today. Maybe I ain't as lumpy, but I'm still just a Thing. Say, what? That's me too. The Ben Grimm I used to be before. Yeah, before. Funny. But I got this sudden urge to see the way it was. The way the so-called Fantastic Four got its start. Let's see now. First thing I can remember is an evening several years back. The four of us was together even then. Yeah, I can see it. I can see it plain as day.
Then you want no part of my plan, Ben?
What plan? Some harebrained scheme to beat the rest of the world into space? Count me out. You know better than I do. The shields on that ship you helped build ain't enough to keep out cosmic rays. We just get ourselves killed. You want to be the big man? You pilot the ship. Yeah, that's how it was, all right. At least what I remember is happening.
Ben, you know we've got to take the chance. Do you want some foreign power to beat America to the moon?
Let 'em.
I never thought you would turn out to be a coward, Ben Grimm.
Nobody calls me a coward. Show me that ship. I'll fly her, no matter what happens. It seems like a million years ago, but I can still remember the wild ride to that secret base.
Susan, Ben and I know what we're doing, but you and Johnny...
Reed, where you go, I go.
And I'm tagging along with Sis, so it's settled.
Reed's ID got us past the gate and the guards. After all, nobody figured that the guy who designed the so-called pocket rocket would be the one who hijacked it.
Well, Ben, everything is A-okay.
Yeah, until we hit the cosmic rays. Nobody knows what'll happen then, not even you. Yeah, we did it. We were first in outer space. Big, hairy deal. Then suddenly it started.
Hear that test tube, Jackie? It's the cosmic rays. I warned you about them, and here they come.
They're penetrating the ship as if it weren't even there. But I don't feel anything.
Naturally, Sue. They're only rays of light, but they'll affect us just the same. I only wish I knew how.
My head? It's pounding, like it's ready to bust.
You were right, Ben. We should have waited, gotten heavier shielding.
Now you tell me.
Johnny, what's wrong? What's happening to you?
I don't know, sis. My body feels hot, like it's on fire, like I was burning up.
Hey, listen to me. Somebody else take the controls. I can't cut it anymore. My arms, my whole body, too heavy. Can't move. Gotta lie down, just for a little while.
Lucky for us, old Reed had fixed the ship up with an automatic pilot. Because when we came back down again, we didn't exactly make a three-point landing. Leastways, nobody was hurt. Though at least not so as it showed right away.
You mean we're all alive?
It was close, Johnny, but we made it.
But Reed, after all your work, your dedication, we failed.
What'd you expect, lady?
We still have to see whether those cosmic rays affected us in any way.
Oh, Reed, I think they did. I suddenly feel so strange.
Susan, look at Sue.
What's wrong?
You're fading away.
Oh, no, no!
It isn't possible.
Somehow the cosmic rays must have altered your atomic structure, making you become invisible.
Sis, I can't see you at all anymore.
How long will it last?
There's no way of knowing, Sue. No way.
Wait, now, I see her.
I'm myself again. It happened so suddenly, all by itself.
Oh, thank heaven you're all right again, my darling.
All right? How do you know, wise guy? How do you know any of us is all right?
Ben, I'm sick and tired of your insults, your complaining.
And I'm sick of you, period. In fact, I'm gonna paste you one right in that smug kisser of yours.
Ben, stop! Look what's happening to you, you're changing.
This is one time you don't talk your way out of it, mister. I'm gonna mop up the place with you, and I mean now.
Wee, darling, run! Ben's turned into some sort of thing. He's strong as an ox.
Wee, darling, my God. Look out, here I come.
Oh, no, you don't. You've had this coming to you for a long time, Ben, and now you're going to... What am I doing? What's happened to me? What's happened to all of us?
You tell me, then we'll both know.
You've turned into monsters, both of you. It's those rays, those cosmic rays. And now something's happening to me, too. Now I know why I've been feeling so warm. Look at me. All I did was get excited, and my whole body's starting to catch fire. I'm like that old-time comic book hero, the Human Torch. I'm lighter than air. I can even fly.
By the time Johnny figured out how to control his flame power enough to land, he could say what all of us was thinking.
We've changed somehow. We're more than just human.
Yeah, or maybe less. But it was Reed, Natch, who took charge.
Listen to me, all of you. We have powers now, like Johnny said. Superhuman powers. More power than anyone has ever possessed before.
We can all read you like a book. You're gonna tell us we gotta use that power to help humanity or something, ain't you?
I might have phrased it differently, old friend, but you're right. We'll need code names. Immodest as it may sound, mine will be Mr. Fantastic.
I've already named myself the Human Torch, and I'm with you all the way, Reed.
The same goes for the Invisible Girl.
One hand is still missing. Ben?
I ain't Ben Grimm anymore. I'm what Susie called me, the Thing. But I'll try to put up with the rest of you, as long as you can stand me. The rest, like they say, is history. Because that was the day when the Fantastic Four was born. And from that time on, nothing was ever going to be quite the same again. Yeah, especially us. Nuts. I've done enough rehashing to last me a lifetime. But none of this is helping Alicia any, or me either. It's funny, though, about the very first bad guy the Fantastic Four tangle with. None other than the Mole Man. He was blind, too. I can see it like it was yesterday. That big, creepy chamber underneath Monster Island. Actually, it was Reed and the Torch who ran into him first. I stumbled in just in time.
So, you have never before heard of the Mole Man, eh?
Should we have?
No matter. No matter at all. Soon the world shall hear of me when I have the entire planet in my merciless grasp.
Whoever you are, how did you get down here? And what kind of place is this?
Listen and grow wise. It all started long ago because the people of the surface world mocked me.
What? Me go out with you? Don't make me laugh.
It has been said that hell is other people. Whether or not this is a universal truth...
Yes, yes, I know you're qualified to work here, but you'd scare our other employees away.
It was so for me.
Hey, fella, is that your face? Are you wearing a mask? No offense.
Finally, I could stand it no longer, and I began a lifelong search for a new place, a better place. Searching, must keep searching. And then, one day, I was washed ashore on Monster Isle, and that strange cavern. Where can it lead to? Soon, I saw where it led, to the land of my dreams. Down there, below, I found it, the legendary kingdom at Earth's center. But in the dread silence of that huge cavern, the sudden shock of my outcry caused a violent avalanche, and... was over, I had somehow miraculously survived, but had lost most of my sight. I found the center of the earth, but I'm stranded here like a human mole. I mastered the strange creatures which live down here, made them do my bidding, and with their help, I carved out an underground empire.
What good's it do you if you can't see it? Come back with us, and maybe we could help you.
Witless stripling, do you think I need your help? Here, try to strike me with that pole. Ah, I sense that coming. I have developed a natural radar sense, a warning system which allows me to evade any danger. Compared to the mole man, you are slow, clumsy.
Hold still, blast you!
Yes, I shall hold still, my young friend, long enough to do this. Now, before I slay you both, behold my master plan. Each of these indicated tunnels lead to a major city. I shall destroy everything that lives above.
Markgrim's number one son had heard enough. I came on like gangbusters.
Who in the name of...
If you gotta pin labels on people, Charlie, just call me the ever-loving blue-eyed thing. And the next thing I knew, something came crawling up from below. Something that made Godzilla look like a blamed tadpole. Holy cow! I could have fought him off, but when the rest of the crew came, bounding at us like rejects from Creature Features, we decided to take it on the lamb. After which Johnny let fly with a fire blast that buried the whole kit and caboodle. By rights, that should have been the last we saw of Moley. But he's popped up a dozen times since then. And the last time was the worst of them all. I remember old Stretch had bought us this weirdo house that was just sitting out in the middle of the woods. And no wonder it was. It was bait. The big fat worm on the end of the mole man's hook. He nearly wasted us that time, too. The whole house gave off some kind of rays that made us all blind.
This is the moment I have prayed for, planned for, since first you four foiled my best-laid schemes.
Sue, where are you, darling? I can't see.
None of us can read.
That was probably the Fantastic Four's greatest fight yet.
Now for the final blow. The coup de grace, as it were.
Then Susie made her move.
Your glasses, I have them.
No. You mustn't. My eyes are sensitive. I need their protection.
Then suddenly the light came on again for all of us. I can see again. What happened?
We must have broken that blindness ray gadget. One thing's for sure, Ben. You won't ever use that against us again.
You ruined me! Ruined my greatest plan!
Somehow, old Moley escaped down his blasted drop tube in the middle of the house. Next thing we knew, he blew up the whole place. Flame near took us with it. Guess he's back in that place he calls Subterranea now, and he can have it.
Sheesh. I've been carrying on a regular talk show with myself, and I don't know why. It's like I've been trying to tell myself something, make myself notice something I missed before. Well, maybe I'm blind myself, but I sure don't... Blind? Sure, that's it. Why didn't I think of it before? All those powers of Moley's, enough to make us all blind, then cure us again. A guy with powers like that might be able to help Alicia see again. And if he does, I'll make him use them to help her. Or I'll pull his two-bit kingdom down around his ears. What's more, I know how to reach him. Through what's left of that nutty house of his.
You're just the man I want to see, mister.
Our Lilton landlord. Evict any poor widows lately, Collins?
Don't try to soft-soap me, you misshapen savage. I know you caused the tremor that just shook the whole building, and I'm warning you.
No, buddy boy. I'm warning you. Keep out of my way.
Wait! Let me down, and we'll discuss this like civilized men.
Oh, me? I'm just a misshapen savage, remember? Besides, I got me a date at the center of the earth. Tell the gang I'll be home for supper with a guest.
or else I won't be home at all.
Good luck. Who knows what will happen at the center of the Earth? But whatever it is, the Fantastic Four will face it together.
And that was the Fantastic Four in The Way It Began. Did you have this one as a kid, Chris?
I heard this. I had a friend who had a record album. I think we've discussed this before, and it had this one. It had Mark of the Man-Wolf, which I also had as a single. It had the Captain America, the Phoenix story, and the Incredible Hulk at Bay.
Right.
And
right.
It had all those on it, and he brought it over, and we listened to it, and, he brought it over and teased me with it before he let me listen to it, because he was a little manipulative little butthead, honestly.
Sounds like it, yeah.
Yeah, he was, I had so many frenemies as a kid. I don't know how many actual friends I had, he finally we listened to it, and I thought it was really cool. And I didn't have the comic at the time, but I found the comic and record set. And the comic is a reprint of, well, it's an adaptation, mostly a reprint of Fantastic Four number 126 from September 1972, written by Roy Thomas, art by John Buscema and Joe Sinnott. So you got an all-star Bronze Age Marvel team right there. It's good.
This book is like right over the plate in terms of like what you would want out of a Fantastic Four comic if you've never read one. It's got a recap of the origin. It's got Dr. Doom. It's got the Mole Man. It's got Alicia Masters. I mean, it's got everything you want. And I had this one as a kid. This was one of my favorite book and record sets. And to me, these are the voices of the Fantastic Four. Like, this is what they sound like. Whoever they got to play the Thing, I love that guy. He has the perfect gruff Brooklynese kind of voice. I mean, imagine what he sounds like as Jack Kirby, you know, sort of. But I mean, I just love the way, you know, I'm what Susie called me, the Thing. Like, to me, that is what the Thing sounds like. The only cast member that I am certain of is Peter Fernandez, of course. Speed Racer is the Human Torch. He also played Peter Parker / Spider-Man, so they reused him here for the Human Torch, which makes sense. I mean, it's the similar age and stuff. But I mean, I love the guy who plays the Mole Man. Like, that guy is fantastic. He has that kind of, kind of like whiny voice. I love when he calls Johnny like a worthless stripling. Like, that's great. To me, it's like, this is a perfect adaptation, perfect distillation of everything you like about the Fantastic Four. And it's got a lot going on. I mean, this is a full three acts. You know, every time I listen to it, I forget how much story they cram into this thing. Because you got the whole opening where the Fantastic Four is all mad at one another. Like, there's that. And then you have the origin, and then you do the Mole Man. Like, this is a ton of story crammed into a 23-page comic. And this is something you and I talk about all the time because we're a bunch of old curmudgeons. But it's like, if this was done nowadays, this would be a 6-issue arc. You know, this would be, you know what I mean? This would be like the Way It Began arc, and it would be collected, as opposed to Roy Thomas gets it all in one comic.
Right. Yeah. And of course, it being Roy Thomas, it's probably even a little wordier than most 70s comics. Because, I mean, Roy packed comics with, I mean, you're right. I mean, he packs just text alone. In one comic, he packed what most writers would put in a trade paperback nowadays. But yeah, this, it's so, I mean, you've got the Fantastic Four, they're infighting. You know, they're arguing. They actually get in a physical brawl. I mean, Ben and Johnny get in a brawl that Reed gets in the middle of. And I love when Reed stretches or that rubber band sound that they use.
All the sound cues in this record are fantastic. No pun intended, but they are.
Yeah, they are. They're great. You get the origin, like you said. I mean, this is like the perfect Fantastic Four primer. I mean, because not only do we get a fight in the current time, and then when they have the flashback, they have the fight after their ship crashed, you know? So it's like most kids would be like, well, that's all the Fantastic Four do is fight each other if they've never seen them before. But honestly, it's not too far off. That's a trope of the Fantastic Four that they, you know, they're a family. They bicker and fight with one another, and that's how it works. And there's little things in here that I love, like Reed's got the Mento helmet thing going on, and
that piece of hardware is genius.
He's smoking his pipe when you first see him with that helmet on, which is just like extra ridiculous. And then when Ben goes to put it on, he says, "Oh, it fits, goody." You know. But yeah, the voice cast on here, it's not too far off the Hanna-Barbera cartoon that preceded it. So the voices are of that same type. So it really works. I mean, these characters sound like you think the Fantastic Four should sound. And I didn't – you always remind me about the Speed Racer actor having worked for Power Records.
Yep,
and
yep.
I know for a fact that this same actor there's a old Frosty the Snowman album that I've still got that I had as a kid. Me and my sister listened to it. And he was the voice of Frosty the Snowman, and he introduced, like, different Christmas songs from around the world. And they had, like, kids singing, like, Christmas songs from this country and that country. And that, so every time I heard Johnny on this, I heard Frosty the Snowman.
Was that a Peter Pan record?
Yeah, it was a Peter Pan record, yeah.
Okay, wow. Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm sure that once they got Peter Fernandez into the studio, they were like, you know, we have him for 8 hours, so let's just do as many records as we can. Here, you're going to play Spider-Man, you're going to play Human Torch, you're going to play Frosty, you're going to play, you know, Rudolph's friend. Like, it's just get as much out of him while he's here.
Right, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Artwork-wise, I just want to mention, I love the panel during the origin sequence where we see Ben Grimm transforming into the Thing, but he's not all the way there. And, like, you see that his hair is disappearing and his face is turning rocky. Like, that, I rarely see the Thing kind of in mid-transformation, unlike the Hulk, which you see all the time. Mm-hmm. And, like, when I look at that panel, it looks like that's really painful. Like, to have your skin turn into rock, it's just, like, there's something about the way Buscema conveys it. I'm just like, ooh, it just looks like a really ugly transformation.
Yeah, and it's like the proportions of his face are even changing to that of the Thing while he's still fleshy, so it's like, ooh, you can just imagine all the bone and stuff. Just it's like a really American Werewolf in London type transformation or something.
Yep.
Yeah, it's great. You know, one thing I thought was kind of interesting though is when Ben first puts it on, the helmet on, he sees the Thing as Jack Kirby originally drew him, as the lumpy, you know, pile of dinosaur poo version of the Thing. I've heard people describe it that way. But then when in the actual flashback, he's the classic Rocky Thing,
right,
just like he was in the present. So that's kind of strange, but you know, I'm not going to complain because it's, you know, John Buscema as you know, you and I both being aspiring comic artists at points in our lives, I'm sure we both had How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way.
Oh, yeah.
And this is how you draw comics the Marvel Way, kids.
Mm-hmm.
This is this is like classic Marvel comics. You know, the artwork in here. I mean, I know John Buscema famously didn't really care for drawing superheroes, but God, you never know it. Cause
you
it's,
ain't kidding, man.
It's fantastic. And Joe Sinnott's like the most polished inker on the planet. I mean, you know, it's just he inks stuff to a fine sheen, and it's great. I mean, this is probably one of the best Marvel productions that Power Records did, and probably, you know, we talked about that almost all the Marvel, well, I think all the Marvel comic book and record sets are adaptations. They're not they're reprints of the comic with the lettering changes made with a 44 Magnum marker. in some places, it looks like people are screaming, and then when you listen to the recording, they're not. But yeah, I mean, they took this and did a bang up job with it. I mean, it's firing on all cylinders here.
Yeah, I love the third part where we get to the Mole Man's origin, and as a kid, the whole sequence of him where he's talking about dealing with the regular world really upset me because, you know, he talks to that woman and she's like, you go out with me, don't make me laugh. I'm like, well, been there. And then he tries to get the job and the guy's like, you'd scare the other employees away. And then the third guy is like, is that your face or are you wearing a mask? No offense. Like, yeah, no offense. Like, what the hell? Like, running into Rodney Dangerfield. What's going on? Like, all of that really, you know. I mean, this is we've joked about in other episodes where, you know, these Marvel Power Records are really dark. You know, yeah. The Man-Thing one is really dark, and the ones are dark, and the Man-Wolf one is dark. And then, you know, this is a children's record that finds the time to insert the line, "Hell is other people." You're like, wow, like you're really teaching kids of the 70s. Life just sucks, kids. Get a helmet, you know? I mean, you're going to have to deal with it.
Well, the first image they see when they open is the heroine of the book dead on the floor with her murderer standing above her. I mean, you know, and then you find out that the leader of the team's like, well, I had to come up with the most repulsive thought I could think of, so I just thought about my arch enemy killing my wife, you know?
Yeah. Jeez, Reed.
My arch enemy ex-roommate killing my... college roommate killing my wife. It's like, dang, Reed. Jeez.
Yeah. These have real grit to them, and that's the thing I like about it. But again, yet it's really fun. It's got that full page shot of Fantastic Four running, which is like, you know, that's the kind of thing you'd see on a piece of merchandise. It's so iconic of the four of them running, and it's great. It's just that it cemented my love of the Power Records. I had this early on. I listened to it 1,000 times. I never grew tired of it. I can just hear it all in my head. I can just recite it. And there is the other line I wanted to mention where they're naming themselves after they've got their powers. And of course, you even have Reed saying to himself, you know, look, you know, I know this is, you know, we'll need code names. I know this may be immodest, but I'm going to call myself Mr. Fantastic. And I just love that little aside that he's like, is this name going to fly? Let me see if I can push this by everybody. How about Mr. Fantastic? Okay, sure. I'll call him, you know, Mr. Fantastic.
I just want one version and somebody, now Marvel's always, at least at this period, I mean, this is pretty much exactly as it was in Fantastic Four number one. I think they toned down the commie talk some. But they talk about beating foreign powers into space. But I mean, I didn't dig out one of my many reprints of FF number one to look, but it seems like it's almost verbatim the original. But I want some version, and they may have done it, where somebody, when he says that, for the rest of them or one of them to look at him and go, really? Really, Reed? What about Mr. Elastic? You know, you stretch. I mean, why? And they hadn't even come up with the Fantastic Four yet. So it's like, you know, Reed's thinking about, it's like, okay, I'll call myself Mr. Fantastic, and then I'll have them name the team the Fantastic Four. So, yeah, that's what I'll do. You know?
Well, it's funny you say that. Have you ever heard that comedy sketch by Norm Macdonald from Saturday Night Live about this moment?
I don't think so, no.
It's on YouTube. You can find it, everybody, if you haven't heard it. I guess it's from like a Norm Macdonald comedy record or something. I don't know if he makes those, but it's just audio. And it is Norm Macdonald as Mr. Fantastic. And it's the other three. He's got three other people doing this comedy sketch with him. And it's this moment they're like, I'm going to call myself Mr. Fantastic. And they move on. And then everybody's like, wait, why are you calling yourself that? And he's like, well, because, you know, I'm like really cool. Like, that's a really cool power. And they're like, I don't know. And it just goes on and on and on. And it made the first time I ever heard it, I never knew it existed. I tripled over in laughter. Because it's so nerdy and so specific, and yet it is exactly right. Because you're like, it's just so funny to hear Norm Macdonald as Mr. Fantastic have to defend his naming choices. So find it on YouTube. It is hysterical. If you're a comic book fan, you will laugh your butt off at this. It's so perfect. So,
okay, yeah, I've got to go find that.
We're going to wrap the show up fast so Chris can find it and listen to it.
I did want to point out, I thought it was, you know, it goes without saying that the FF origin, you know, I mean, let's fly into, you know, Reed has, you know, in later stories as the series goes on, like Reed, you know, Reed was Batman before Batman was Batman as far as like having contingency plans for everything. But yet in the origin story, he didn't wait long enough to put enough shielding on the ship to protect them.
Oopsie.
Cosmic. You know, they're going out into space with a screen door, basically, you know, and Ben, you know, which that's one thing that I think a lot of people, because of, you know, his accent, the way he's portrayed in the comics, and because he's a big, you know, bruiser of a guy, that people tend to kind of, you know, think, well, you know, maybe Ben's this big dumb lug, but he's not. I mean, Ben's like a Air Force pilot. He's a smart guy, and he's also the voice of reason that's in the origin story saying, hey, now, wait a minute. And then, he's the one that suffers the most for it. So it's that much more tragic because of it. But, you know, I don't want to be, you know, pick the Fantastic Four origin apart and deconstruct it too much. But yeah, it's kind of hard not to. And when you read it now, to go, wow, Reed, really? And then you're the guy that wants to be Mr. Fantastic. You're really fantastic there, Reed.
Mr. Consequences. Okay, fine. That's whatever. That's fine. Yeah, this is a really great record. And you mentioned that this was released on an LP with the other three Marvel records. It's got the Mark of the Man-Wolf. And the record was called Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, which is sort of funny because there's very few copyright dates on any of these things. I have to assume that this record came out after the TV show. That they repurposed this, and that's what they called it that. But it's Spider-Man, Mark of the Man-Wolf, plus Fantastic Four, plus the Incredible Hulk at bay, and Captain America and the Falcon in a Phoenix and Arise. Although I have to say the quality control over at Power Records wasn't that high in 1981. They must have been borrowing people from Mego, because on the sleeve it says Captain America and the Hawk.
Yeah.
And a Phoenix shall arise. Like, they couldn't even get his name right. It's the Falcon, guys. Come on. But this was released in another format, and this was something that I didn't know about until I started doing the Power Records blog, thanks to one of our Power Pals, Rockwell J. Pugglesworth, which is, I don't know, is that his real name? He sent us photos of the Fantastic Four, the way it began, on cassette. I never knew these were ever released on cassette, but this was released as a cassette two-pack with the Captain America. Wow. And Felix Shall Arise. And so they were, you know, Power Records were around long enough for cassettes to be a thing. And so they released some of their records on cassette. And I never saw them. I had no idea they existed. But he sent me photos of them. And you can see them on the blog. So, you know, it's a shame that Power Records never lasted too much past that. But they did at least try to keep up with the technology.
Right. Yeah, I remember it made me think, because I had the Spider-Man and the Invasion of the Dragon Men on a cassette, and shared that. But that made me think Spider-Man and the Invasion of the Dragon Men is an original story, as far as I know.
So
they did make an original one. Of course, it was Spider-Man, because Spider-Man was their go-to guy, obviously. You know. But you know, one other thing I just wanted to point out before I forget is there was a line in here when the Mole Man's fighting Johnny, he mentions that he's mostly blind, but he has a radar sense. And I'm just wondering, and somebody can probably answer in the feedback, has Daredevil ever encountered the Mole Man? Because they got the same shtick, apparently. I never really even thought about it. You know, they both got this, they're blind with this radar sense. So I don't know if, you know, Daredevil, you know, took a break from fighting ninjas to go fight the Mole Man, or maybe in his pre-Frank Miller days he did or something, but let us know if he did. I'm not sure, but
they've had to have met over the year after 50 years of Marvel Comics. How could
I would
not
say they would have? Yeah, I would say so. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, you're right. Oh, that's funny. I said it's a really great record. I couldn't believe it. We've been doing this show for a bunch of years. We haven't gotten to this one yet. So, yeah, this one is just terrific. So, yeah, that is the Fantastic Four, the way it began. So now we're going to move on to our second record of the episode. And this one, we'll get to it, but it's not quite as good as Fantastic Four, the way it began. So why don't you judge for yourself? This is Spider-Man in The Bells of Doom.
Beautiful, Mary Jane, just beautiful.
Yeah, there's something special about Sunday morning in Central Park.
Soft summer breeze and cool green trees, shafts of golden sunlight filtering down through whispering leaves on young lovers below. Hey, how about that? Rod McEwen, eat your heart out.
I hate to tell you this, Petey, but a poet you ain't.
Oh, is that so?
But your heart's in the right place and you do have redeeming features.
Yeah? Like what?
Ooh, listen.
Listen to what?
The bells, the old cathedral bells. I love that sound, don't you?
Who, me? Oh, sure. Hey, all of a sudden my spider sense is tingling.
So silvery clear, so pure, so near.
A poet, MJ, you also ain't. I'm tingling like crazy. Old spider sense is screaming danger. Mary Jane, look out!
Peter, that tree cut in half. Clean as a whistle, just where I was standing before you pulled me away.
Like it was hit by lightning, only there's not a cloud in the sky.
What could it have been?
I don't know, but let's get out of here. Something tells me this is the beginning of big trouble. Trouble is, I don't know what the trouble is. Well, here we are, back in the hot, muggy streets of New York. Some ending for a Sunday morning in the park.
Oh, forget it, Petey. Just one of those things. Let's walk over to Jefferson Center and see what's on for tonight.
Okay, though I'm not exactly in the mood for Mozart and all that kind of goings-on. Uh-oh, here comes that trouble, only sooner than I expected.
Look, Peter, those police cars are headed towards... Oh, wow!
All right, stand back, everybody!
Jefferson Center! It's gone!
Wait here, MJ. I gotta get a closer look and some pictures for Jameson.
Hold it, Mac. Where do you think you are going?
Here's my press card, officer. I'm a photographer for the Bugle. Did you see what happened?
It was weird. I'm sitting right here in the squad car, looking right at it, and pow! Like lightning out of the blue. No warning, no nothing. $5 million worth of cement and glass 1 minute, a pile of dust the next.
Calling all cars, stand by for special orders.
This is the commissioner.
Hey, the top brass gotta be pretty important.
At 11 o'clock this morning, a series of simultaneous bombings leveled buildings all around the city. Jefferson Center on the west side, the International Exchange downtown, a UN mission on the east side, and the University Library in the Heights were destroyed, among others. No clue as to the identity of the bombers. All off-duty officers report for duty immediately. Patrol cars in bombed areas proceed with caution. Further instructions will follow.
Sounds like time for Spider-Man to go into action. Well, thanks, officer. I've got my pictures. Mary Jane, I'll call you later. Gotta get this stuff down to the Bugle.
It is 11:45 that night. Outside a deserted warehouse downtown, a glimmer of light shines through a boarded-up window on the top floor. Inside, Sean Strickland, sound engineer at a top New York recording company, stands facing the most formidable array of electronic equipment ever assembled under one roof.
I baited the trap, and now just a few minutes, and I'm on my way. Those dumb cops will never figure out how the bombings were done. But Spider-Man will, and he'll walk right into my trap. And when he does, I, Sean Strickland, son of Sonic Man, will destroy him. Power. How sweet it is.
At that very moment, swinging his way through the canyons and rooftops of mid-Manhattan, Spider-Man thinks aloud as he approaches his rendezvous with death.
Whoever is responsible for those bombings laid them out in a neat circle around the city. At the same time, he hits the tree in the park like he's aiming an arrow for me to follow. Not to Jefferson Center, but from the center to the tree, and then straight on to... Ah, there it is. The cathedral, right smack in the center of the circle. Uh-oh. Watch it, Spidey. Old Spider's senses ring a-tingle in a way like those bells. The bells. Of course! Why didn't I think of that before?
Yes, Spider-Man, you were a little slow. You kept me waiting.
Huh? Well, what do you know? Sonic Man! I should have known.
No, not Sonic Man. Ultrasonic Man.
Now I see why there were no bomb fragments, burn marks, or radioactivity at any of the bomb sites. Sound was the weapon.
Correct. By combining an ultrasonic intensifier with my multidirectional macrosonic disintegrator, I magnify the sound waves of the bells into an incredible destructive force.
So that each stroke of the bells was spreading a circle of destruction around the city. But why the tree in Central Park?
I knew your bird-brained friend Peter Parker was there with his girlfriend, and that he would get you in on the action.
At least he doesn't know that Peter Parker and Spider-Man are one and the same person. How come, chum? Why me?
Nothing personal, you understand? But by destroying Spider-Man, I'll show the world, and more particularly those dim-witted, no-talent studio execs, that I, Ultrasonic Man, who they call Sean Strickland...
The recording engineer at XYZ Recording?
Right. I'll prove that I'm the greatest sound man of all time, and I'm starting right now!
So it's the web slinger versus the bell ringer. Wow, gotta get out of the way of the sound waves of those bells. And faster, I'm a dead duck.
Too late, Spider-Man. The bells toll for you.
But not for long. How's this for a fancy web shot? Got him! All the bells in one web. And now that your bells have gone bye-bye, little man... Just be a good boy and give yourself up.
Oh, yeah? Well, just try this on for size.
Jumpin' Jehoshaphat, a sonic ray gun. just barely got out of the way.
My miniaturized microsonic disintegrator, one attached to each hand.
You mean used to be attached to each hand. Man, he's fast. Got away from two of my best web shots. And yikes, I'm out of cartridges.
The sonic jets on my feet make me the fastest human alive, besides being the most powerful. But enough of this chit-chat. Say your prayers, Spider-Man.
He's poised on the spire of the bell tower.
Here I come!
He's diving straight at me. Both disintegrators firing and me with no weapon. It'll take a miracle to get me out of this one. Well, what do you know? The bells, they broke loose from the webbing.
Help, Spider-Man, help! My sonic jets have gone dead. I'm falling,
How about that for a miracle? The vibrations from the bells put his jets out of action. But I just can't let him fall. Gotta grab him as he comes by. Oh, there, got him. Now, to take some of the broken webbing from the bells and wrap him up in a nice little package for the police.
Did you hear what happened last night? Spider-Man captured the Mad Bomber.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he was a recording genius who invented this gizmo that turns bells into bombs or something.
Well, I'll be a ding-dong daddy.
He's got these things on his hands and his feet, and the whole thing was a trap for Spider-Man, and you wouldn't believe what happened.
Right, and that was Spider-Man in, I called it The Bells of Doom, but the record actually just says Bells of Doom. Mm-hmm. So, Chris, what do you think of this one, which is clearly an all-original effort by the Power Record staff of the Spider-Man story?
Oh, you know, it's fine. It's a really short adventure. Spider-Man is the same actor from Invasion of the Dragon Men, and he lays it on really thick. I mean, even when he's Peter Parker. Of course, when they give him expositional dialogue like, well, here we are back on the muggy streets of New York, you know, it's just, it's like, I don't know what he really could have done with that. But yeah, he's, even when he's Peter Parker, he's like super over the top and extra quippy. So, but yeah, you know, it's fine. I mean, I do really find it interesting that Peter Parker is knows the name of a sound engineer who works at a local recording studio. Just off the top of his head, you know, that guy must do some really good work. That's all I know, you know.
Yeah.
What did you think about it?
Well, I think it's clear that, like, these were aimed at a little bit of a younger age. Not that the original Power Records are meant to be for adults, but I could picture that the ones based on the comic books were maybe aimed at, like, an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old. And these, I feel, are more for, like, a 7 or 8-year-old. You know, they're more reflective of, like, Spidey Super Stories or the Spider-Man and Electric Company, because they're just much more simplified. Although this one does feature a joke about Rod McEwen, the poet, which was like, what the hell? Why would a kid even know who that is? That joke just jumped right out of me. But they're just a lot simpler. The villains are a lot less scary. This guy that wants to get revenge. I mean, the cover art, if you look at the cover art, it's by an artist named Bill Gow, who was presumably a Power Records staffer, and he did all the artwork for these records, and they're pretty simplistic looking. They look like a Spidey Super Stories thing. They're just very, very basic, and they're just much more, I'd say, geared for a younger audience, which, again, that's fine. They're meant to be children's records, but they're just, to me, they're just not as sort of sophisticated or as interesting as the earlier ones, but that's fine. They never did this as a comic book. The only version of this I'm aware of is it was released as a 45 and then as an LP with all the other ones, because there were others in this series. So it's fine. I like that Mary Jane is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's cool. Like, it's nice to incorporate some other character from the universe. I mean, she was in the other ones too, but I mean, I like that. So yeah, it's a fun story. It's kind of silly that the guy's just getting this revenge on the recording industry, which is like a weird, like, all right, like, I don't know, fine, you know. Like, it doesn't seem like that. When you talk about, like, the man wolf wants to kill J. Jonah Jameson, this guy wants to get revenge on, you know, record producers. You're like, all right, does Spider-Man really need to get involved in this? But you know, it's fine. So it's cute. I never had this one as a kid, it's a perfectly fine Spider-Man adventure.
Yeah, you know, there's some fun little bits in here, and I actually think Ultrasonic Man, if this had been canon, then Spidey could have sprung Ultrasonic Man out of jail and used him against Venom. You know, because we all know that sound waves hurt the symbiote. You know, anytime I hear like bells and Spider-Man, I cut to that scene in the Web of Spider-Man number one where the symbiote dies, quote unquote, the first time. So, you know, or they did it. They did the same thing in the movie, you know, in Spider-Man 3. It's fun. It's got some, you know, some of Peter's dialogue. I love at the end when he says, "Well, I'll be a ding dong daddy. Only MJ knows for sure."
Yeah, oh boy. Yeah, it's funny what you say about the movies, because it's like, as we've been hearing that, like, Sony is doing solo movies of, like, the Black Cat and the Silver Sable, like, and they're going to apparently do one on Kraven the Hunter now, because they own all the Spider-Man ancillary characters. So yeah. I mean, if they get desperate enough, maybe they'll do Ultrasonic Man as a villain, as a hero. A movie, you know, who knows what the hell. I mean, I'm guessing that, like, Ultrasonic Man, like any character created on a Power Record, is their property, I would guess, right? It's not a Marvel character. It's Power Records probably owns it now. Power Records doesn't, Peter Pan doesn't exist as a thing anymore. It's been subsumed into another company, and you can find all that stuff out on the internet. But I mean, I don't know what the deal is, but I can't imagine that Marvel owns Ultrasonic Man. They own Spider-Man, but not anything that they would have created originally.
I wouldn't think so, but I'm not really sure how that is coordinated. I guess how the contracts were signed. You know, it's like if they, you know, if they add. I mean, I have seen other, you know, other properties licensed out. They develop something and then it ends up making it into, you know, like I think Orko from Masters of the Universe was developed just for the cartoon by Filmation, right. But seems to be part of the property. And there's no Filmation to go back to now, really. I mean, there's people that own Filmation's various properties, but I think he goes lock, stock, and barrel with Masters. I mean, maybe Dr. G could straighten us out on that, since he's got a Masters of the Universe podcast. So maybe Marvel does own Ultrasonic Man.
Never know. Well, someday some writer could dig him out. You know, who knows? One day. So,
Tom Hardy versus Ultrasonic Man in Venom 2. Who knows?
Dear God, that movie I'd go see. I'm not even going to bother with the Venom movie, but if they bring Ultrasonic Man, I'd go see that. So I think that's going to do it for Spider-Man: Bells of Doom. Like I said, it's one of their lesser records, but the Fantastic Four one is so good and. It's so much fun, and it's a book and record set that's great. So check it out, everybody. You can see it, scans of it on my website, which is at powerrecord.blogspot.com, and we'll have the link in the show notes. So that's going to do it. Before we sign off, though, we are going to do feedback. Again, we've had 9 months to compile the feedback, so we're going to do the feedback for episode 17, which is our Scooby-Doo Xmas record. So the first comment we got is from my erstwhile co-host on many other shows, the Irredeemable Shag, and he says, "Love this episode and these stories with that alternate scrappy cover. I was terrified we get the Scrapmeister himself." I would never do that to you. "And the most shocking thing is a Mystery Inc. actually let the cops do their job in the last story. They left the bad guy for the cops to catch. Their co-producers must have run out of time for an elaborate trap. Great episode. Up next, $6 million man, please." Sorry about that, Shag. We will do more $6 million man, but not just yet. If anything, just so Chris can do his Lee Majors impersonation, which I love.
My Lee Majors / George W. Bush impersonation.
I love it. I love your impersonation. That's one of my favorites of yours.
We heard from Chuck Coletta, who says, "Do you guys have a most least favorite version of Scooby-Doo? I've recently been rewatching Mystery Inc., and it's fantastic. For anyone unfamiliar with this series, it's got a continuing storyline and definitely has a Buffy vibe. There are nearly a dozen Scooby podcasts now being produced. My current fave is Scooby-Doo's and Scooby-Doo's or Scooby-Don'ts, which is looking at every episode in the Scooby franchise in chronological order. They are currently at the 13 Ghosts, Vincent Price era of the mid-1980s. So what's your favorite era of Scooby-Doo, Rob?
I hate to be so unoriginal, but it's the first one. You know, that's the one I grew up with. It's the one that has the most kind of horror content. Like, the monsters are kind of like Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Like, the monsters are played until, of course, they're unmasked at the end. They're played relatively straight, you know? Like, they actually try and get a little creepy with it. I love all the, like, that opening credit with all the graphics, and you see like the, you know, the guy in the diving bell costume and the guy and the mummy, and like it's as close as you're going to get to like a horror cartoon as you could do. So it's really that original that I love. Not that I don't love the ones with the celebrities; those are fantastic as well.
Oh, the Scooby-Doo movie, the new Scooby-Doo movies. Yeah,
yeah, those are so good.
Yeah, I would have to go back to the original too. And one thing that I really like about the original is it's got this creepy color palette. I mean, it's like everything's kind of like desaturated and earthy toned. And even though like the Mystery Machine and some of their colors are kind of garish, everything else is really kind of muted and just shadowy. And it's the painted backgrounds are really evocative and creepy. And yeah, they kind of lost that as they went along. My second favorite probably is a pup named Scooby-Doo, because they just had so much fun with that. They like, you know, that was like in the late 80s, and they already were picking on the tropes of Scooby-Doo in that series. You know, it's like, that was like the first like self-aware cartoon that I ever really encountered on network TV. So I really like that one. It's a lot of fun. I love the theme song too. So
there's been a lot of good versions of that show. It's very durable. I mean, J.M. DeMatteis is writing the current Scooby-Doo series, which a lot of people say is terrific. I haven't been reading it, but people say it's really, really good.
Well, and the Scooby-Doo team-up comic is a whole lot of fun.
Oh, and that too, of course. Yeah, oh, the Scooby. We love that book. I never tire of this Scooby-Doo team-up book. That's fantastic. So, Ryan Daly from our network, of course, he says, "Forgive me for pointing out an obvious plot hole, but why would Joe the Handyman leave Mr. Johnson tied up in the orphanage bus where he could easily be found? That's a living, credible witness to Joe's crime. Wouldn't Joe have been smarter to murder Mr. Johnson and dump his body somewhere difficult to find? At least he could totally could secure an alibi and or leave for a country with an extradition treaty? I'm sorry, but I found this particularly Scooby-Doo tale a little hard to believe." So, okay, now we need to look at the timestamp of this comment. This was left December 17th, 2017 at 10:28 p.m. I feel like Ryan just got home from The Last Jedi and then left this comment. I feel like that's the time frame that we're looking at here, because he was just in a mood to hate everything at that point, which is why he really craps on this Scooby-Doo record so heartily.
And that mood has not changed in those months.
No, right. That mood is still existing. Right. So, Ryan, I hope you get help. That's all I could say.
Yeah. We heard from Lindsay Warner, who wrote, "I love Scooby-Doo, but I really dislike dream sequences. What's this? I cannot talk today. What's the point? I think they could have done a great Scooby-Doo meets Santa Claus episode, though maybe that's been done. That being said, I do think that it being a dream sequence was a decent reason for Scooby to be such a good detective and hero of the story. It was bizarre to me that he wasn't more distracted by food. I liked the second one. It really was a mystery that kids could solve as they listened, and that was great." Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, that you could, like, you know, follow along with it. And, you know, that's one thing about Scooby-Doo. I mean, after you watched a few episodes, you figured, well, they introduced, like, two people. The real kind of shady guy that's barely given any screen time, he's going to be the monster, you know?
Right.
But yeah, this was a nice little mystery, as I recall. It's been so many months since we listened to it, but yeah, I think it was a good one.
Yeah, that's cute. Brian Linton says, "A great episode with two fun stories, gentlemen. Though I agree that I agree with Rob that I found Scooby's verboseness to be strangely unsettling. When I was growing up, the company my dad worked for in Cincinnati would hold their annual company picnic at Kings Island. So I made it out to the park at least once a year for much of my childhood. I remember fondly the Hanna-Barbera ride that Chris mentioned, as well as the Smurf ride, compete with the continually playing La 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 theme song that replaced it. Those rides were indoors and air-conditioned, making them a must on hot summer days. Sadly, I don't recall the Super Friends having a presence in Hanna-Barbera land. Now that would have been awesome." And when I responded to that, and I said, "Oh man, if there had been some sort of Super Friends land, I would have dragged my parents to that, even if it had meant skipping the mountains one year. I mean, that would have just blown my mind if I could have gone to a Super Friends themed theme park. That I would not have been able to handle that. I would have wanted to live there. That would have been so cool."
Yeah, Hanna-Barbera never had any Super Friends presence that I recall. Hanna-Barbera land at Kings Island, but. When Andrew was really young, the Kentucky Kingdom here in Louisville, I'm near Louisville. They had it was a Six Flags park, and it wasn't, then it was, and now it's not again, which is unfortunate because they had DC stuff. And so they had, a Batman penguin white water raft ride, and they had the characters in costume and stuff. And man, Andrew, just the first time we took him, he went insane. I mean, he actually got in trouble because he ran away from us to go meet the Flash in amongst all those people. And so we were panic stricken when we found he wasn't gone that long. It was just like a minute or two, but still, you know, as a parent, you just like go into complete and utter panic mode. But if they had been there in the 70s or 80s at Kings Island, I probably would have like never left. So.
Yeah. Oh, just, I would have been like just romping around the Hall of Justice and stuff. It would have been so cool. So Dr. Ange comments, he says only halfway through, but got a comment on the first story. I assume Scooby-Doo talked more because it was a dream sequence. In his dreams, he's much more articulate. Me too. With the long white hairs on the sill, I thought the culprit would be Mrs. Claus, who didn't steal the toys but was going to give Santa the night off. A polar bear? Weak. Lastly, young Ange would have snickered when Santa described his big, heavy sack. Thank you, Ange. Thanks for keeping it classic.
Yeah, after my ding-dong daddy comment earlier.
The man is a physician, for Pete's sakes.
Bruce Wayne Weaver says, another great episode, insightful, entertaining, and most of all fun. First time hearing these stories, and I enjoyed them more than I expected. Y'all do an excellent job on this podcast. I'm patiently waiting for the next episode.
Oh, sorry, Bruce.
Well, I hope you are much like your namesake, Mr. Weaver, and you know, you can sit in a Tibetan temple for months and wait for your master to arrive to teach you the martial arts or whatever, because it took a long time to get to this episode.
It did. Absolutely. Sorry about that. Mike Bridges says, just saw this. There hasn't been a Power Records podcast in so long. Uh-oh. I just gave up thinking the well had run dry. I had never heard of these Scooby records. One thing I noticed was Scoob called Shaggy instead of Raggy. As you mentioned, he has quite a bit of dialogue. You're right. Now we know that it's a dream sequence. It doesn't have to make any sort of literal sense. And addressing the comments that it's been a really long time. Yeah, we apologize. And I promise, I think Chris, I can speak for Chris here, that we won't let another 8 months pass before we do another episode. We try to do them like theme-wise, like if there's a movie coming out, you know what I mean? Like we could do that. And something else that I want to consider, and you guys can leave in the comments what you think about these. I did a bunch of Power Records showcase episodes for Fire and Water back when, before we even had a network. And so I covered a lot of stories by myself. I would like to do those again with Chris, because it's not the same doing them alone as it's doing with Chris. So if everybody out there would be okay with that, I would be happy to redo some of those episodes, but do them as an actual Power Records podcast show. That way we could cover Aquaman, we could cover the Shazam record, because both of them have movies coming out. Mm-hmm. There's lots of other stuff I would love to do. So, Chris, you'd be on board with that, right? We could redo some of those?
Sure, yeah, I'm up for anything. We could even redo the few that we did before you and I did together before we got on Power Records proper if we wanted to, I guess.
Yeah, because, I mean, and there's other ones we want to do. I want to do Hollow Man at some point.
Yeah.
And I want to do Gemini Man. Like, I really want to dip into the real obscure stuff. But we also try and make these as sort of, you know, universally palatable as possible by having some named characters people have heard of. But I desperately do want to get to the real weird corners of the Power Records lineup. So I guess that's going to do it for this episode of the Power Records podcast. As always, you can find back episodes of the show over on our website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. Chris, what do you have coming up?
We've got some more JLU cast coming your way. And then in September and October, Cindy and I are going back to Supermates in the House of Frankenstein.
Yay!
Yes, we're going to cover a horror movie and a related comic in each episode. So, you know, good Lord willing, the creeks don't rise, as my dad says. We'll have four episodes out before Halloween. So we're looking forward to it. I'm working on them right now. So
very cool. Excited. I'm looking forward to it. So I love when you guys do the House of Frankenstein. So it's going to be super, super fun. I hate to see summer end, but it does mean that House of Frankenstein is coming back. So we get some good and some bad. I have a bunch of shows coming out, of course, the Treasury Cast, MASH Cast, a bunch of other things. It's just, you can all find it on our site, which is, again, fireandwaterpodcast.com. So please leave comments. I promise we will get to another episode sooner than 8 months from now. So if you leave comments, we will read them on the air sooner rather than more than a year from now. So I think that is going to do it. So until the next episode, drop the needle and turn the page.
Come, Robin. Into the Batmobile and home. Okay, I was up all last night, and I think I've come up with a great name for the group. Since we all have such fantastic powers, I think we should be called the Fantastic Four.
Ooh, Fantastic Four.
All right.
That sounds good.
I like that.
Yeah, and I have come up with individual names as well, if I may. Ben Grimm, you are a rock-like thing of a man. You will be called The Thing.
Great.
Sue Storm, you're a woman who has the power to make herself invisible. The Invisible Woman is your name from now on.
Good.
Johnny Storm,
You
are human, and yet you are a torch.
Yeah.
The Human Torch.
The Human Torch. Okay.
And I, Reed Richards, can stretch my body like a rubber band. I will be Mr. Fantastic. Okay, let's get on to business. First order of business for the Fantastic Four. Dr.
Reed?
Doom has the entire world's plutonium
Reed.
Supply.
Excuse me for a second.
Yes, Ben.
Never mind.
What is it, Ben?
It's nothing.
Ben, we have to speak openly here.
Well, it's just about the names.
Do you like yours, The Thing?
No, I'm fine with that. It just seems a little... Well, I'm kind of a thing of a man. You're calling me The Thing. Sue is a woman who can become invisible. She's the Invisible Woman.
Makes sense.
Johnny is human, yet a torch. So he's the Human Torch, right?
Sure.
And you can stretch your arms like a rubber band. And you've named yourself Mr. Fantastic.
Yes, Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just seems a little odd, you know.
Yeah.
I don't understand the problem. I mean, we're all named after our powers.
Right. But your power is to stretch like a rubber band.
Right, that's why I come up with the idea, Mr. Fantastic. It's a fantastic ability I have.
Right, no one's saying it's not fantastic.
I mean, many people, when they see me stretch, they often use that word, fantastic.
I think what Ben's trying to say, Ben, right, is that we all have fantastic powers, but we're called what we do.
Right.
Yours is stretching.
Maybe Mr.
Stretch guy.
I was thinking stretch.
But that's my name.
Right. El Stretcho.
El Stretcho.
No, not El Stretcho. No, it's Mr. Fantastic is my name, okay? Now, if you guys have problems with your names, we can talk about it. My name is Mr. Fantastic. Let's talk about Dr. Doom.